Hello, this is Eric Sinrod. I'm also here with Jonathan Armstrong with your weekly Tech Law 10 podcast we bring to you, where the law and information technology intersect. It's a baking hot day here in San Francisco. How about you, Jonathan?
Well, surprisingly, it is here in the UK as well, scorching hot.
Must be that global warming thing we keep hearing about.
I think it's the day we call our summer.
Well, I'm glad you finally get that. So anyhow, this week we're here to talk about, well, you have some thoughts apparently about why April is not necessarily the cruelest month, but perhaps very recent months, May and June, have been fairly cruel. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, sure, yeah. So April is the cruelest month is an allusion, of course, to Geoffrey Chaucer, a Middle English poet back in the day who wrote about April being cruel. But it seems to me that in data privacy, data protection enforcement terms, May and June have taken the biscuit, as we say, in the UK. There have been 10 investigations leading to undertakings, fines, or court proceedings in May and June alone, and we're only just more than halfway through June. And that's probably the 2 months with the most significant enforcement activity ever in the UK. And the prosecutions and investigations have ranged over a whole load of technology-related misdeeds, most of them around information security. My favorite, perhaps, is the CCTV website Internet Eyes. They have a really interesting business model. They take retail CCTV footage, so that's closed-circuit security cameras in shops, and the premise of the site is that quite often the people who own the store are too busy to look at the CCTV footage. So you can enlist online an extra pair of eyes or extra pairs of eyes from people who are sat at home with nothing better to do than watch closed-circuit camera footage remotely. And when they see somebody that they look like is stealing in the store, they sort of press a button and an investigation takes place. The information commissioner, who's the data privacy regulator in the UK, investigated Internet Eye after some footage that one of these remote workers was meant to be looking at somehow got onto YouTube. And the regulator asked for undertakings, their sort of almost court-backed promises from the company concerned that that wouldn't happen again. And interestingly, they also imposed various measures to protect identity. So, for example, the remote viewers couldn't view footage in the same postcode or within 30 miles of the store. And that seemed quite interesting to me. The rationale behind that is they didn't want the remote viewers to be able to identify the people involved in the footage. And there have been another 9 prosecutions as well, Eric, in the last 6 weeks or so.
Was there one that involved T-Mobile? And if so, can you tell us about that?
Yep, there was actually. This was a criminal investigation against 2 former employees of T-Mobile. They uploaded customer data and sold it, and there were criminal proceedings in Chester Crown Court. So our court system is fairly serious court. Most criminal cases are heard by the magistrate's court, which is at a lower level. And there were fines of just under 74,000 sterling. That's, well, I think on the current exchange rate, the way the dollar's doing, that's about 2.7 billion US dollars, isn't it, I think, today. So 74,000 sterling. And confiscation orders. The confiscation orders are something that we've had really for drugs barons, so that you could prosecute somebody and steal the white-walled, tired BMW convertible that they'd bought themselves with the proceeds of their drugs dealing. But for the first time, we've used that those powers for data protection legislation as well, to say that the two guys who made money by selling customer data had to return their ill-gotten gains and pay that over in court. So that's quite an innovative prosecution in itself as well.
And it sounds like, from what I understand, that the ICO's activities are fairly wide-ranging. Can you tell us, I mean, is it true that they've even swept up a couple charities?
They have, yeah. Charities and public bodies have been a target of, I guess, around about a half dozen of the cases. The charities concerned this time round were prosecuted because they lost laptops that weren't encrypted, something that we've talked about in these podcasts before, Eric. Seems to be no excuse to have a laptop that isn't encrypted. And in addition, people should be looking at software solutions like CompuTrace or something like that to make sure that not only is the data encrypted, but also they can track the laptop if it's stolen and find it again. We've had those sort of prosecutions. We've also had a software subcontractor who uploaded personal details from a life planning company onto a website that he thought was secure and wasn't. We've had misdirected emails. We've had a unlocked bag containing personal files lost. We've had a law firm prosecuted for failure to keep its client files secure. And then another quite disturbing one we've had was a guy who he worked for a personal injury claims company. You might call them ambulance chasers over there. He wanted to get some new customers for his ambulance chasing firm, and he got his nurse girlfriend to leak records of people who were coming into the clinic who looked like they'd suffered accidents. The criminal prosecutions were brought against the claims handler. The nurse herself was investigated, but unfortunately a horrific end to the prosecution against her. She wasn't prosecuted because it wasn't in the public interest to do so after she tried to kill herself. So it seems to me that information security is no longer trivial. This activity in the UK is mirrored in some respects across Europe, where the regulators are getting tough. Partly they're getting tough because there have been more breaches and the public are more concerned about it.
Well,
but partly also because of this new EU directive that we've talked about before, Eric, as well.
Yeah, and that probably gets to my next and probably last question as we're just winding up here. But to what do you attribute the spike in ICO activity? Is it because the ICO is simply taking this more seriously and flexing its muscles, or do you just think that there are more data security breaches that deserve the attention of the ICO?
I think it's a mixture of all sorts of things. The public sector breaches, I think more of those are being reported because the UK government has encouraged public sector organisations to assume there's a data breach reporting requirement similar to that which exists in the US. That isn't the case in the UK. If you're not an ISP or a telecoms company, then you're not necessarily under a duty to report to the ICO. But more people are reporting. It is related to this EU directive. This is the directive that brings in a security breach obligation for telecoms and ISPs. I think that's part of the mix. But also in April last year, the ICO got more powers to fine organizations up to £500,000sterling for each breach of the legislation. So I think in some respects, this is the ICO flexing the new muscles it was given in April last year as well. We're starting to see some of those cases come through the pipeline as well. But I think this is a taste of things to come. I don't think this is transitory. The ICO has used some of the fines to increase its own resources and increase the publicity that it's giving to information security as a good thing. So I think we're bound to see more of this activity, not just in the UK, but also in countries like Germany and Austria who've toughened up their laws as well.
Well, very interesting. Thank you, Jonathan. As we would say, this takes the cake. You would say this takes the biscuit. At least we're similar in going through heat waves at the moment, but we're now winding up. This has been Eric Sinrod and Jonathan Armstrong for your weekly Tech Law 10. We're both partners across the pond at Duane Morris, an international law firm. Our website is www.duanemorris.com. I can be reached directly at my email address, ejsinrod@duanemorris.com. We both can be found in the cyber ether of Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, et cetera. Jonathan, if you want to close it, here we go.
Yeah. Yes, I'm at jparmstrong@duanemorris.com. All that remains is to say thank you for listening. Hope you're having good weather where you are and that you get out and enjoy it. And we'll speak to you again next week. Thank you.
Thank you. Cheers.